Welcome to the Hermit's Lamp Podcast. I'm Andrew McGregor, and with each installation in this podcast, we're going to explore the world of spirituality, what it means to be alive, and how is it that we can bring our spiritual selves, tarot, meditation, religious or spiritual practices, into our daily lives. Please check out all of our episodes at thehermitslamp.com/podcasts, or you can search The Hermit's Lamp in podcasts on iTunes and download them all directly that way. If you are looking for card-by-card instruction on reading the tarot, please consider checking out James Wells and my new audio project, The Trumps Card-by-Card, where we dig in deep to one of the major cards and explore it thoroughly. If that sounds exactly like what you're looking for and gets your tarot juices all fired up, you can certainly also find that at thehermitslamp.com/podcasts. So, welcome to another installment of the Hermit's Lamp podcast. This is actually the 200th installment of my blog, and this is also this month, July, marks 11 years that I've been working full-time as a tarot reader. So I thought when it came to episode 200 that I would sort of like to talk some about what I've done and what I do and what I'm into and what's exciting for me. But, you know, I didn't want to be like a weirdo and just kind of have a monologue for the next hour or whatever I'm on here. So I have roped my partner in life, Hanlon, onto my podcast to come here, and I'm going to hand all the power over to them to kind of steer the conversation for the next stretch of time. So hopefully you will enjoy it.
Okay. I started with excellent. So I have a few notes.
Uh-huh.
I have some questions to ask you.
And by that, there's like pages of questions in front of me. So
Yeah, well. I would like to know what's been the biggest surprise of your tarot career.
The whole thing. The fact that I even do this for a living. The fact that I have an aptitude for it. You know, I never really thought that I would get into being a tarot reader. I never really thought that you could make a living as a tarot reader. And, when I was finishing my career, although I didn't really know that I was finishing my career as a graphic designer and art director, I was looking for something, and I was, you know, talking with a bunch of people and working with a Jungian analyst and kind of trying to figure out what I should do. And I thought, oh, there's the surprise. There's my 7-year-old sneaking out of bed for something. We'll just leave that in there. We'll pretend like it never happened, right? So I thought, man, maybe I'm a visual artist. Maybe I should become a tattoo artist. You know, I really want to help people, and I'm fascinated by psychology. And so I explored the possibility of becoming a therapist. And sort of somehow in this mix, when I was looking for something new, I talked to a friend of mine who said, well, you know, you're really good at this. You might even be better than I am. I'll get you a job working at this website that I work at. And so I started doing that, found out that I was pretty good at it. After a little while, my friend left the store that he was at and moved to another city and got me in to work there. And I really, for the first while, I kind of thought it was temporary. I kind of thought that I would go and get a PhD in psychotherapy, or, you know, I might do this or that or something else. And it took me a little while to realize, well, you know what, actually this is actually what I want to do, and I can actually make a living and, you know, kind of support myself doing it. And sort of secondary to that, it's always surprised me, or continues to surprise me really, how much I can just hang out with people and talk about their issues and work on their issues with them and just be really present and engaged and not really get tired or burned out by it. You know, I mean, my my capacity to be compassionate, to listen, to engage with people really surprised me as well. You know, I was always kind of picturing myself being more of a curmudgeon as I got older, as opposed to being kind of more of an open-hearted kind of person. So there you go.
Yeah, your punk rock roots could have led you down that path, but
definitely
something else has happened. Well, how did your life before being a reader influence your reading style?
Well, certainly, you know, I spent a bunch of time studying and doing peer counseling work with people. You know, building community, being engaged in environments where consent and consensus and those kinds of ideas were important. You know, really kind of doing a lot of work around being inclusive, being understanding. You know, a lot of that stuff is really, really formative in it. And, you know, I mean, and I think that one of the reasons that I'm, you know, the one of the things or aspects of life that really sort of informs my reading is all of the experiences, you know. You know, as you said, I was a punk rocker. Spent a lot of time sort of rebelling and shaking my fist at the system, you know. And then I went to art school and studied sculpture for 4 years. And then I got into doing graphic design and worked predominantly in the financial industries for a long time, while still kind of shaking my fist at them. But, you know, I just had such a wide range of experiences, and I think that a lot of that has really kind of been brought into my practice as a way of, you know, I can relate to people on many, many different levels, and in many ways I've lived many lives that really kind of relate to what I do, so...
And you say peer counseling. I know what that is because I've studied it too, but how specifically does peer counseling play out in your readings?
Well, the peer counseling model that I work with, that I learned from my friend Bruce Small, is basically that you know, the person you're working with has the answers, and what they need is attention, some good questions, maybe someone to listen to them, and occasionally a you know, sort of metaphoric 2x4 to the side of the head when they're just kind of like full of shit. And you know, so you know, I mean, a lot of my reading style involves questions, conversation, you know, that kind of stuff. So that's definitely how it kind of plays into it.
Have you ever noticed a correlation between the archetypal artwork of the tarot, various tarot, and the concept of script from peer counseling?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've been thinking a lot lately, and it hasn't quite sort of distilled fully into something, but, you know, there's sort of a series of cognitive biases that people talk about, right? You know, so... you know, for instance, belief that everything, that we're constant, right? You know, this sort of a cognitive bias, right? And this idea that, you know, and there's a lot of scripts, you know, it's same idea, different words, right? That people, well, I'm constantly the same and everyone around me is changing, or, you know, these kinds of ideas. And what I've been pondering a lot lately is the way in which each of the court cards basically plays out some aspects of these scripts or cognitive biases or other ideas. And so I've been sort of in a kind of casual way, because I have some other projects on the go right now that I'm trying to be really on top of, but sort of chewing through that and letting it distill into, you know, what will be a more formal sort of way of looking at the court cards as representing some of these ideas, as, you know, because they are the manifestation of these things, right? You know, I mean, certainly all the cards represent traps and escapes, or scripts and their solutions and these kinds of ideas too. But I think especially the court cards really kind of exemplify that kind of mental, or, you know, mental, psychological, spiritual, emotional trap. So,
how has tarot transformed you?
how has it not transformed me? I mean, you know, it's kind of impossible for me to separate tarot from my journey through ceremonial magic and my initiation, pursuit of initiations, and, you know, all of these kinds of things. It's very hard for me to kind of parse out a particular thread and say that came just from tarot or that just came from, you know, from something else. But, I mean, I think that tarot has really helped me sort of structure and understand myself. You know, I have a very personal set of relationships to the cards, where certain cards come to stand for certain threads of kinds of people and kinds of situations or, you know, ideas in my life. And when they surface in certain kinds of situations, then I'll be like, oh, I see, this is a Queen of Wands person who is like that ex-girlfriend and like this other person and like that problem that I had at this time. And so in that way, you know, the cards become this sort of filing system of my experiences and a way for, you know, and so they've kind of changed me by giving me perspective and giving me, you know, a language to conceive of and understand of myself in these ways, and then to also look beyond that into the ways in which the cards then can advise to resolve those issues or, you know, move beyond the ruts and circles and traps of playing stuff out over and over again.
Have you ever had a reading come up over and over again that you asked this a question or you were seeking advice and you kept encountering the same set of cards, the same theme?
Sure. I mean, yeah, definitely I've had Tower times and, you know, Emperor times and other times, you know, and relatively recently I've been exploring the sort of notion of birth cards, and you know, there's a system that Mary Greer uses, Carrie Parris uses it, Ruth Ann and Wald Amerstone from the Tarot School have, I think, a slightly different variation, but, you know, this sort of numerological approach to kind of looking at what your birth card is and how that kind of defines you and how that plays out year by year. And, you know, so I'm kind of exploring some new models of that. I basically always kind of looked at it whenever I encountered it years ago and was like, meh. I always used a sort of more Golden Dawn, straight astrological set of correspondences. And you know, so I always looked at those more so. But even at that, you know, that in that way also there were certain sort of ideas that, you know, would play out over periods of time and so on. So, yeah. I don't know if that exactly answers your question.
I guess my question was, I'm sure everyone who's played with tarot over a long period of time has encountered the feeling of doing a reading and saying, oh, I knew that, or uh-huh. That's what keeps coming up. How do you handle that challenge?
Well, I mean, I guess one of the things is that I don't really read for myself in the way that I read for other people. You know, I mean, I am teaching a class on basically some of the tools that I use to read for myself coming up over the summer and available via streaming video later on, but I don't often sit down and do full spreads and look at all sorts of ideas. I use the tarot as a planning and organizational tool. I use it as a tool for introspection. I definitely use it for like kind of a check-in, you know, like I was writing a difficult email for somebody the other day where I was kind of giving them some bad news and, you know, I was like, grabbed a card, I'm like, am I done? Is this, have I got it? Because I was like, you know, and I flip a card and look at it and be like, okay, I gotta add something like this. And then I sent it off, you know. So I use it in those kinds of ways. You know, but for me, in my life, generally speaking, tarot is a fairly casual thing that I just pick up whenever I want to pick it up. I'm not a good tarot person in that I don't do my cards of the day every day. I don't do a lot of things like that that I think are very fruitful, and that I certainly have done at times. But you know, we're sitting here in our living room recording, and I can see 1, 2, 3, 4 decks, 5 I think, within arm's reach. You know, I've got like 4 or 5 sitting on the desk at work, and like 3 sitting on the desk in the office at work as well, right? So they're always around, and it's just like, oh, I got a question, I got to ask this, or I got to do that, and I'll just kind of drop into it and drop out of it. For me, it's kind of a constant companion, you know, and I use an app on my phone for the same thing, you know, mostly mm-hmm. just kind of like 1 or 2 card things, not usually big complicated anythings. A little more lately over the last while, I've been doing Lenormand readings, and I kind of do those monthly, which are interesting, and I kind of got into that as much just to learn Lenormand, because it's kind of a movement these days, because it's become more prominent again, you know, but that's the closest thing to kind of a bigger thing that I do, and even at that, I'm kind of casual about it, so.
Mm-hmm. So you made a deck recently.
I did make a deck.
Relatively recently. Uh-huh. And your, at the time, 6-year-old daughter decided that she was going to make a deck.
Yes.
And she began.
Uh-huh.
And what do you think about that? What do you feel about that?
I love my kids' relationship. I love our kids' relationship to tarot, you know. We were sitting here, we had the Toth deck out, and we were doing readings of the day, and, you know, her 5-year-old Irene was like, oh, I want to draw a card. I'm like, all right, draw a card. Drew the 7 of discs, you know, and she says, what does it mean, Dad? And I'm like, I don't know. What do you think about it? And she looked at it, and she looked at me, and she goes, I really like the patterns. I think it's beautiful. And I'm like, wonderful. Then that's what it means, you know? When it came to the deck that Claire was creating, I mean, you know, the 10 of, you know, joy of having the top bunk, and the, you know, 9 of excitement of going camping tomorrow, and these ideas, I mean, they're great, right? Because they are fundamentally true and fundamentally conceivable in a way that, you know, sometimes people struggle to connect with the deck, and in that way I think that her ideas are really quite inspiring, so.
And what do you think about Irene asking, who's 5, asking to have her own copy of the Thoth deck?
Absolutely, I'm going to bring one home for her. Yeah. You know, why not, right? I mean, to me, I started with the Mythic Tarot, but I sort of played with that for a couple of years, but I never really got into it until I got into the Thoth deck, and, you know, I don't think I need to go on, because everyone already knows how much I like the Thoth deck, so, yeah. You know, but I think it's a great deck. I think it's a wonderful deck for beginners. I think it's a wonderful deck for anybody who wants to work with it, and I think that it's acknowledgement of the shadow side of life, you know, is great, and you know, I mean, as a parent, I don't really want to raise our kids to be in denial that sometimes life is difficult, and sometimes you have a hard day, and sometimes you want to cry or yell or break stuff, and sometimes you might, right? And at the same time, life is also wonderful and joyous and full of light and love and passion and all sorts of great stuff too. And you know, I mean, it's all there. It's all part of the experience. So, you know, I don't want to pretend like it's not there. So, in that sense, you know, like people often ask stuff like, you know, what's a good deck for kids? And I'm like, any deck that parents are comfortable with the child having, you know. And really, yeah. I mean, and really what I mean by that is any deck, and you know, check in with the parents first, right? But from my point of view,
mm-hmm.
I think that there's a lot of just control and hegemony and sort of denial of life and bodies and sex and bodily functions and you know, the power games of society. You know, there's a lot of that that kind of goes on or tries to be sort of enforced in child rearing, and, you know, and really kind of in people up to a certain age, and maybe even all the time. You know, maybe my inner punk rocker is still just showing, right? But, you know, it's like Alan Watts' book, called The Book, and then the subtitle is On the Taboo Against Knowing Who You Truly Are, I think is the title, you know? And, you know, to me, this sort of freeing and cleansing ourselves of these ideas as grown-ups, and this book was sort of written with the idea that it would be handed to sort of young teens to help them understand the ways in which, from a kind of Buddhist perspective, culture and scripts and baggage and all these things work against people knowing who they are, but that this, you know, that all people should truly pursue their own kind of liberation. So
yeah, and you were in the room with her, and she kept appearing in the kitchen to me with the cards that she had chosen, and it was unclear to me whether she was selecting them, like choosing the ones that she liked visually, or if she was randomly selecting them, but she seemed really excited about her choices.
Yeah.
So I think in some ways that's almost a magical act to go through all of that artwork and decide what it is that you gravitate to, mm-hmm. or to, you know, choose a card and joyously celebrate it either
exactly.
way.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah.
So I'm going to shift gears just a little bit here. We've gone right into the living room, and now I'm going to take you back out into the world a little. What was it like interviewing your heroes and mentors?
You know, I mean, the process of podcasting and stuff, it's been interesting because when I thought about it, especially less so since I sort of picked it up again this year, but, you know, when I first reached out and did that sort of initial run of interviews, you know, I mean, growing up, you know, I mean, I got my first occult book or my first real spiritual book, even before I got a tarot deck, I think, was Magic and Theory and Practice by Aleister Crowley. And, you know, so I was like 13, and I was at a psychic fair, and, you know, my mom supported getting whatever I wanted, and so I bought that, and I bought 777, which is, for those who don't know, it is basically just a series of columns of correspondences of things and where, at least in the sort of Western mystery tradition, they correspond to the different paths of the Tree of Life and so on. And so, you know, I grew up pursuing Crowley's work, and of course then by extension reading lots of what Lana Milo Duquette had published and these kinds of things. And, you know, there was definitely this kind of, oh my god, I'm going to talk to Lon Milo Duquette, you know, and Mary Greer, you know, and really like everybody that I talked to, except for James, because we were already friends, right? you know, so, I mean, it was interesting, and what I really kind of came away from that with is, you know, to varying extents because of geography and access and other things, but in a kind of general way, that I made a bunch of new friends through that process. And, you know, these days when I'm podcasting with people, I feel that even more, you know? I mean, it's not, there's nothing about my podcasting process that is anything other than just sort of a general notion of a few things that I think are interesting about this person and things that I think might be interesting to other people, and really just kind of a fascination. And, you know, to go back to that kind of peer counseling idea, really it's a matter of I listen and I engage and I share where I see it's appropriate and where I think it makes sense. And, you know, we just have this conversation. And, you know, I mean, often after the fact, I'm on Skype with people for another hour just yakking about this, that, and whatever. And it's wonderful, you know? So, I mean, I don't really think of it... yeah, I don't know. The word heroes is kind of a little strange to me, you know, at this point in time. But certainly back when I was doing when I first started podcasting, there was this, like, you know, that sense of that difference. And these days now, it's, you know, it's just sort of a matter of, you know, thinking of people as colleagues and potentially friends. And, you know, I certainly learn a lot from talking to people, you know. I mean, getting to ask people questions and dig into the things that they're doing while I'm talking to them on the podcast is, you know, I mean, it's wonderful, right? Like, it's very exciting to me, right? Of course, it's part of why I do it. And, you know, and I always learn something new or deeper levels of things or, you know, that kind of stuff. Or sometimes I even, it helps me, just as in readings, it kind of helps me reveal to myself things that haven't had the cause to articulate clearly but are significant. You know, so something will just kind of come up and I'll say something and it'll be like, yeah, I really believe that actually. That's really important. I need to, like, go back and think about that some more. So, yeah.
Because as your partner, I've gotten to watch the excitement.
Yeah.
And then I listen to the podcasts and I hear so much fascinating things that I've learned a lot from. And then it seemed to me that there must have been some shift along the way there. So it sounds like there has been.
For sure.
It's just become commonplace to be able to dig into something with somebody.
Yeah, no, it's pretty amazing. I feel very fortunate to, you know, to that people are excited about what I'm doing and supportive and, you know, and, you know, willing to spend time with me, you know, in that way. You know what I mean? Like, it's definitely something that's I feel super grateful for. Absolutely.
I guess my other question about the blogging and the people that you've been speaking with is, do you think there is a common thread amongst all the people that you've interviewed? I mean, tarot isn't necessarily the common thread because some people are not actually tarot practitioners. But I guess I'm curious to know if there's sort of anything that stood out from all of those interviews as...
You know, I mean, I think the thing that I'm realizing more and more, you know, as time goes on, is, you know, I Enrique posted on Facebook a long time ago, I think around the time that he was stopping doing readings for people. You know, there are more interesting things that we can do with the cards than sit down and read about the future, you know? And while I think that sitting down and reading about the future is fascinating to me, I think that starting to sort of, in all the people that I'm looking at, I'm looking beyond sort of just the basic formalities of reading and learning what cards mean and these kinds of ideas, which are, you know, an important part of everyone's journey. You know, I mean, there are, I'm sure, some directly intuitive people out there who are doing great stuff, but, you know, I think that for me, if you don't have a sense of some system of what the cards mean, you know, you're doing psychic reading or you're doing something else, which may be 100% spot on and valuable, but it's not tarot. It starts to migrate into something else. The cards just become a prop for some other thing. And, you know, so, but at the same time, there's so many other things that we can do with and in and around the cards, you know, and some of it's like really wild and crazy. Like when I was talking to Christoph, who, you know, is really kind of pushes the envelope with the psychomagic and Hodorowski's approach and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, and other ideas are just, you know, more, you know, in different directions. But I think that where we go beyond, you know, where we go beyond the first session or what goes on beyond what happens in the room is what I think kind of is the through line to what I've been talking about with people in many ways.
I guess I hear in what you just said a lot about creativity and bringing something personal. I had thought about the fact that you're an artist and a tarot reader. And I know that some of the people have been writers, and there have been artists, and there've been, and I find that connection between art and reading and tarot and authoring, I find that very fascinating. Mm-hmm. So where do you see your tarot practice going?
Well, I'm, you know, I think that certainly I am really enjoying teaching a lot these days. You know, I ran the Reading the Toth deck class, which is, and now it's available after the fact as a kind of on-demand thing, as most of my stuff is or will be in the future. And, you know, I mean, I think that for me, teaching is an important thing. Creating more decks, or more work, artwork around tarot. You know, I have the collective project that I'm sort of starting to build up and invite people towards, the Triumph of Life, where I'm asking artists to pick a card and answer the question, how does this card take us from a place of loss and suffering to a place of joy and remembrance? You know, and this deck is sort of geared towards, you know, I'm going to collect 78 artists over the next while and publish this deck and then basically sell it to raise money for cancer research. You know, I think that for me, where I'm really interested in is the ways in which you can, you know, in terms of direct practice or sort of ongoing work with people, the ways in which we can transform their consciousness, the ways in which you can change the way people think, the ways in which we can break down people's preconceptions and limiting notions of what is possible, what is real, ways in which people can you know, really journey into stuff. You know, I've been doing a lot more ongoing work with people, and you know, I get these wonderful emails after sessions, you know, where they're like, "That was really hard. I really didn't want to get into that. Thank you, for sitting with me through it. Thank you for taking me through it." You know, when because we walk around with this stuff, and there's no easy place to get into it. There's often not a safe place to get into it. You know, it's nice if we can talk to our friends and these kinds of things, but, you know, there's a reason why you go to somebody else, because they can just sit and witness or engage or guide or, you know, tap you with that 2x4 if need be or whatever to kind of help carry through. And so for me, that kind of stuff is really interesting. You know, the stuff where, like, What are the kind of more spiritual or magical tools we can engage and take into the world? I'm in the process of starting to do more guided meditations for people coming out of readings, and so I'm gonna be I haven't sort of formalized it into a kind of plan or a practice exactly yet, but it's something that I've been doing and that I'm gonna start kind of offering in a more clear-cut way, where, you know, you come for a reading and then out of that, you know, create a 15 or 20 minute meditation, or, you know, maybe longer, maybe less, to kind of help absorb the metaphors and story and idea of the reading, or to help shift the kind of unconscious patterns through guided meditation. And, you know, so a lot of that kind of work that I don't know. So many people would kind of lean towards calling it shamanic type stuff, but I don't really, I'm not really into that term for it. But anyways, I don't know. The wording of it, I guess, will find itself, right? I tend to avoid finding labels for things and just kind of do things, which is sort of both a plus and a minus. But anyway.
Fair enough. I'm gonna backtrack a little bit then.
Okay.
Because that's.
Back it up. Back it in.
Okay.
Throw away the questions.
Starting again. When I was listening to a lot of your interviews,
yeah.
especially the interviews about change, and is that part of this? So I used to listen to your podcasts while I was running,
uh-huh.
and I used to stop and make notes on my BlackBerry.
Uh-huh.
So cool. Imagine me running around a track, stopping, entering the notes section of my BlackBerry, and putting questions into it.
Awesome. So you never told me that before.
I had these wonderful questions. Unfortunately, they all went into the saltwater pool in Nova Scotia last summer. So I'm going to try and bring some of them back from beyond the depths now.
All right. We'll resurrect them from the ocean floor.
I mean, one of the questions I had for you is you spent some time discussing whether or not it was possible to change, for people to change.
Yes.
Was it possible for people to change? And some people thought it's very difficult for people to change, or
yeah.
possibly impossible. One person ended up saying something to the effect of, until someone is ready to change, you cannot, nothing you will do will make them change.
Yeah.
Right? I guess my question is, how do you dance with that on a daily basis?
Hmm.
So what gold have you mined from that?
Some fool's gold?
Wow, I mean, that's a good answer.
You know, the thing about changing is this. Changing takes a bunch of work. I mean, changing easy stuff, you know, there's certain things you can just change your mind and that'll change. You know what I mean? You know, there's certain stuff that you can kind of just push through. You know, if you don't like olives, eat a dozen, and then they say you'll like it by the end of them, right? You know, there's a certain amount you can kind of just get from one place to another by sheer willpower. And then there's the kind of stuff where, you know, you want to, like, stop slacking off and start making your art. Or you want to understand why you came to Earth and bring your life more into alignment with that, or, you know, whatever. And those kinds of things, they require a lot of commitment to change. And they require a willingness to really kind of push through stuff. And in many ways, they require other people. You know, I mean, I've certainly changed things and made realizations on my own. But a lot of the change that I have made is because I've been shaped and allowed myself to be shaped by the people that I've met along the way, you know? And I've been bold and at times reckless and, you know, willing to really sort of sit in uncomfortable places as a way of understanding that, you know? And so, you know, change doesn't come, for the most part, easily, and certainly from long-standing stuff, change doesn't tend to come swiftly. You know, it's not like it takes forever. You know, I mean, I think that for most people and for most issues, you know, 6 months of hard work and you could probably resolve most things. You know, but instead people get caught up in, well, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that, and, you know, I'll go on this latest diet and it'll change everything, or, you know, I'll go and do, you know, Reiki and then I'll become an enlightened master, or, you know, whatever. Like, all these things work, right? You know, Reiki, tarot, angel cards, whatever you like. They all have value. But none of them, not tarot, not any of that, is really going to change you unless you're going to work with it. And probably, in many ways, unless you have somebody, especially at the beginning anyway, really kind of pushing you into the harder stuff and helping you realize what's going on, right? And even at that, you have to be willing to accept it, which is difficult as well. You know, I mean, there's many times where I've read for people and been like, you know, this and this and this is your problem, this is why you're stuck, and here's how you can fix it, and whatever. And they're just like, okay. And then they're like, No. You know? And it's like, well, fair enough. There you go. Maybe that's the exact right choice for them. I don't know. But, you know, I think that these are the problems, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and never mind the question of whether you want to change to something that's actually better, or whether your desire to change is just, you know, dictated by your script and your resistance or cultural norms that you need to move away from, or, you know, I mean, the whole question of what is it that people actually want to change into, and is their image of it even actually either real or better for them? You know, is a whole other matter too, right? And this is the value of reading the cards, or, you know, working with people in one way or another to kind of evaluate these things. You know, because I think that once you do get a clear sense of what your real goals are, whatever exactly that might mean, then the change becomes easier, even though I don't know that it ever really becomes easy per se.
Right. So the clarity allows you to make choices about whether or not you're ready to change.
Yeah.
Speaking of change.
Uh-huh.
You were having some dreams about moving across the street, moving the store across the street.
Yes.
For many months before you actually ended up moving the store across the street.
Mm-hmm.
So in that situation, do you feel that it was a straight-up psychic connection? You knew that there was going to be a space come up? I mean, the way it came up was really interesting. I was up in the middle of the night. A friend posted about the space. And
yeah, I mean, everything about that series of dreams. I had dreams for a couple months, fairly regularly before the space came up, that I was across the road, going into or locking up or looking back across the road at the old store and, you know, thinking about it. And, you know, so I'd like stand in front of the old store while I was still there and look at the different places and be like, which one is it? Which one is it? And of course it was none of the ones that I actually thought. It was like five doors further down than I imagined. But, you know, even in one of the dreams I had, I remember looking back and thinking, oh, I really should go back and take down that old sign. And wouldn't you know it, the light box, which belongs to the building, not to me when I moved, the person who moved in, who told me they were going to put stuff up there and hence take down the old stuff, totally hasn't, even though it's been 3 or 4 months. And I've started thinking, man, I should just you know, leave a note in his box and bring my ladder over and go and scrape it sometime. But, you know, so, I mean, yeah, those things are definitely there too, right?
Mm-hmm. I found that. You know, I mean, there's lots of wonder stories you could tell, but I found that a really interesting wonder story from our personal life that affected the business.
Yeah.
And it also gave me this really huge sense of comfort that, I don't know, that there's something organic unfolding there, and that you were kind of tapped into something that was happening.
Yeah. Well, and I think that, you know, I mean, there's lots of ways in which people sort of take signs from the universe, and, you know, numerology and, you know, different things and stuff people see, numbers people see in these things. And, you know, I mean, the stuff's great, and there have been times where those things have been interesting to me. And these days I find myself less interested in that and more interested in things or sort of demanding more from spirit. And so things like these dreams and stuff like that, like, I think that the clearer we become, the more aligned we become with ourselves, the less of a threshold we have between, you know, layers and layers of baggage or suppressed stuff in our spirit, you know, the more in which we can receive these kind of real sort of super direct kind of messages. And in some ways, you know, I don't walk around looking for signs and things all the time, but I certainly do find myself seeing things and being moved at times, you know, and I have no doubt that spirit and, you know, is adjusting the course of my life continuously, and I'm doing my best to listen to it, so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you didn't walk around the neighborhood looking for rent signs. It came to you by a completely different channel. So
yeah, for sure.
I thought that was just kind of interesting.
Cool.
Yeah, I think so. I think I've asked you everything I can think to ask you, but it's tough because I already know a lot of it. So thinking of things to ask you that I didn't already know was a little tough.
Yeah, well, that's fun.
Yeah. I feel like I should say something to wrap it up.
Wrap it up, Hanlon. Come on.
Well, it's been very nice chatting with you, sir.
you also?
Have a wonderful rest of your evening with your wonderful family and partner.
Exactly. Okay. I think it's time for some Doctor Who.
Sounds good.
All right. Thank you all for listening. Let me know, let me know what you think. Let me know if you got questions. Let me know what you're enjoying about the things that I'm putting out there. And if there are people you'd like to hear me interview or try and have on the podcast or, stuff like that, please jump in. I really do enjoy hearing from people and hearing the feedback and being engaged because, it's we live in a global world and this stuff reaches out through time and space to all sorts of people. And it's wonderful to be engaged, somebody sent me a message recently saying that their reading told them that I was to be part of their chosen family, and so they reached out to me, and I was like, wonderful, amazing. So yeah, I'm around, come and find me, listen to what we're doing, talk to you soon.